Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Alan Levy Show at blogtalkradio.com. Be prepared to call in now and chat with Alan and his very special guest right here at blogtalkradio.com. With no more further ado, please welcome your host, Mr. Alan Levy.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Alan Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio. It is Friday, May 16th, 2008 at 2 p.m. Eastern. So thank you for joining me on the Alan Levy Show, blogtalkradio.com. I'm the founder and a co-founder and CEO of Blog Talk Radio. And I'm joined today by my sometime co-host, Hillary Lee Wong. How are you, Hillary?
Hi, Alan. Doing well.
Good, good. It's been a while since we've done one of these shows together, about a week or two.
Oh, yeah, but nice to be back. It's been so busy, it's like hard to get on the air sometimes.
Yes, well, I know. It is hard to get. Even for us, it's hard to get on the air. So we are expected to be joined by David Corris, who I think actually may have just popped up on the switchboard. And David is the CEO and founder and president of BlueTie.com. So we're going to get into what BlueTie does. And he had written a post on Media Post called How to Monetize Web-Based Applications, which I thought would be very interesting for our listeners. Again, this is blogtalkradio.com. The live show is here at our site. You can join the chat room. The chat is available on our site, and the archive is available at blogtalkradio.com/Alan Levy, and you can pick it up on iTunes or wherever else books are sold. So I think, David, are you on?
I am.
You are. Well, congrats. Excellent. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Sure, my
Hi,
pleasure.
David.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Nice to have you.
So this is Blog Talk Radio. I don't know if you'd heard about us before we reached out to you, but here we're a internet radio platform, live calling, as you have just called into our platform. And we're going to take calls today, if you don't mind, if people want to call in with a question about the topics we're going to talk about. And Hillary, why don't you give out the number?
Okay, our number is 347-677-0649. I'll also put it in the chat room. We have some friends hanging out there now, anxious to hear our show. I think they've missed us, Alan, as a duo.
Okay, well, we'll have to do more of that. So, David, why don't you tell us a little about BlueTie and what you're looking to account, what BlueTie.com does?
Sure. So we actually have two core businesses. We started about 9 years ago competing against Microsoft to deliver a small business email and collaboration service. And today we have about 250,000 businesses, a little over 3 million users that rely on our platform. And then we actually, about 3 years ago, added a second business where we started providing email on a white-labeled model to large ISPs like IAC and Forbes. And we actually got into the problem along the way where they said, hey, we don't only want you to run our email, we want you to help us make money on email. And that's where we really got into this model about how do you monetize a web-based application. Because we went around and looked at all the different options out there, and none of them work well at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a real challenge. And there's so many businesses, companies, particularly Web 2.0 companies, that were financed based upon an ad model. Number one, not even clear whether or not it can support advertising, and certainly not at the rates that these banner rates are declining to.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of it's a function of whether or not you believe that banner ads are the right mechanism to monetize applications. And so I'm of the opinion that if you were to extrapolate out from the content world, if you're reading through a magazine, having a, you know, display ad is a reasonable thing. But likewise, if you go to Forbes.com or CNN, seeing a banner ad is pretty tolerable. But when you're inside of an application, the ads are distracting, they consume screen real estate, and so they're annoying from a user perspective. And so I think there's a real risk to advertisers that they're going to tune those ads, that users will tune those ads out. And so I think you're going to see a declining CPM as advertisers continue to realize that advertising in applications just doesn't work.
Well, you're already seeing declining CPM. I was speaking to someone over the weekend who has been aggregating impressions for Facebook and MySpace, and the banner rates for remnant inventory is around 11 cents a thousand.
Yep, we're hearing numbers as low as 8 cents to 15 cents per thousand. I think, you know, that's not a number that people are going to make money at. And so the theory has been, and if you listen to all the CEOs of these social networking companies talk, they always talk about data. They always say, if we understand our users, if we have the social graph, if we understand the connections between users, we'll monetize better. And, you know, we took a look at it and said, it's not really about the data. You can have all the data in the world that you want. You know, Gmail and the models where you're actually scanning your personal email, those models still don't work because what they all have the same, they share in common is that they lack intent. They don't add any value to the user experience, so the users just tune them out. And so
What's a typical click rate, click-through rate now on banner ads, would you say?
It's less than in social networking. We've heard numbers that are one out of every 5 to 10,000 page views.
Wow.
And we know they're going down.
And why, that's why the rate is at 8 cents. So, and there's just, here's the other thing. Somebody had told me the other day that they heard someone speak, and this individual was selling advertising time for TV during the Seinfeld times, you know, the day on NBC where they had these huge audiences on Thursday night, and movies and other large, you know, leisure-type platforms, entertainment platforms wanted to advertise on Thursday night because that's where the attention was Thursday night, and then people would go to the movies over the weekend. Well, now it's just so fragmented, and there's an unlimited supply. You know, you only have prime time on NBC between 8 and 11, you know. But think about the web. It's an unlimited supply of pages.
Yeah, the bigger problem is it's an unlimited supply of crappy page views, right? They're page views that don't add any value. And so I think it's an even bigger issue than that. I mean, you know, the one thing that comes down to is it's not just an issue of supply. It's a greater issue of format. Right, and so if you think about it, everyone will say, "Did you see that ad on TV with the little kid?" Or did you see the recent Coke ad? You know, the ads that are on TV combine video, they combine sound, they combine high quality production. They resonate. I've never walked in the office and someone said to me, "Man, you should have seen that banner ad the other day." I just don't think they resonate.
True. Oh, it's not as emotional of an experience, but there's also, I mean, what do you think about video bumpers, you know, on video watching sites or those kinds of ads?
I'm of the opinion that the video advertising market is going to turn out to look a lot like it does today because sites like Hulu I heard that they've sold 6 months of ad inventory out in advance, which is pretty incredible. So demand is far outstripping supply, but it makes a lot of sense. They don't suffer from the worry that someone's going to fast-forward their ads like on a TiVo.
Mm-hmm.
And a user who's sitting in a hotel room or sitting at home and wants to stream down the latest episode of The Office, they'll deal with a 30-second ad in between because that's a format they've dealt with for 20 years. So I think the long-run video advertising is going to look a lot like it does today. I think the challenge is on the short-run stuff.
You mean UGC content, like YouTube stuff?
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, it's really hard to stomach a 30-second ad on a 2-minute video. You know, it's a lot easier to deal with 60 seconds of ads on a 20-minute show of The Office.
Right.
So
they're shortening the format for those videos. You'll have, like, really short ads in front, but like you said, you can't fast-forward through, so the impact is greater than a regular commercial in that way.
Yeah, so I think that will help. I'm of the opinion. I'm a software guy, not an ad guy. Although I now write a monthly column for MediaPost on advertising, but so somehow I crossed the fire road when I wasn't paying attention. But I do think that there are questions in my mind at least as to whether a 3-second video ad is enough to resonate. I just don't think we've done enough studies to figure out. If you go from a 60-second ad that people are used to and, you know, a lot of ability to sell and create a story around a brand,
mm-hmm.
in 3 seconds there's not a lot of time. So you're effectively doing almost the same thing as just it's a banner ad with a little bit more content. So I'm curious how it'll work.
Yeah, well, we've been, for Blog Talk Radio, this is a site that, you know, half of it essentially is ad-sponsored or portion of our network is ad-sponsored with banner, but we also mostly it's going to be audio impressions where we insert into our shows, you know, this show, let's say will be tagged technology or let's say, no, I'm sorry, advertising or marketing. So we can aggregate like content and insert audio ads and different types of impressions, audio impressions throughout all of our shows. And I think in April we had close to 3 million listeners to our shows.
And I think that makes a lot of sense to me because you guys look a lot like TV. You're long format. And so if you're having a high-value conversation, like hopefully this one will be perceived as,
yes,
you know,
it will.
I think it's easy to have, you know, 60 seconds of ads inside of a 30-minute conversation or 60-minute conversation. I think it's a lot harder when you're talking about a 2-minute video or a 2-minute audio clip.
Yeah,
definitely.
No question. And the other thing that we have done, and we've been thinking a lot about this, because we're not a site that's going to have a gazillion banner impressions. I mean, that's just not what Blog Talk Radio is all about. It's real engagement, and people here live, we're talking, and other people are listening live to this, participating in the chat. We've created a station environment where companies, we're licensing radio stations, privately branded stations for companies, so they can create content and be part of the conversation. And use our tools, which is just simply phones. We've put together this phone network that's integrated to a streaming environment. So we're seeing a lot of major enterprise clients. We have Sun Microsystems, Intel uses Blog Talk Radio, the Department of Defense, and others. And we're seeing that companies are seeking more engagement. Are you seeing that from the enterprise clients? I mean, you have 250,000 companies using your service. That's an enormous number to use your technology.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're providing, white labeled shows like this, I think is a really cool concept. I mean, that's what if you think about how many drivers there are for Time Warner Cable or Comcast driving around, as they go off to do, servicing, how cool would it be if they could bring episodes of the company's show with them so they could stay educated on news while they're in the car? So I totally get it on the corporate side. I think it makes a lot of sense. We're definitely seeing companies, both businesses as well as companies that provide services to other businesses and consumers, trying to find ways to engage them on a deeper level and a longer level. And so when you look at services like internets, ISPs, ISPs used to own the portal, and today they don't. They used to own the start page. So if you think 10 years ago, when you fired up AOL, you were in the AOL experience, and that same was true for Earthlink and NetZero and Juno and all the other ISPs out there. And today it's not. Today you open up a browser and you go to Google or you go to your Yahoo start page. And so I think there's a lot of demand from ISPs, from people that own the network, to try to figure out how to re-engage themselves into the conversation. And I think to do that, they're going to have to figure out how to add more value to the user experience.
Now, I'm guessing you're a Twitter user. Are you using Twitter?
I'm not. I'm probably on the hyper skeptical side of the Twitter conversation.
Yeah, I wanted to know your view about Twitter because I have no idea what their model is going to be. I know they're testing ads in Japan, but given the decline in banner rates, I mean, I don't see what their model is. What's your view of Twitter?
I'm fearful. Twitter to me is a sign of the. I feel like we're growing a generation that's going to be dumber than the generation before it. I've never seen a brilliant article that came out of a brilliant comment that came out of a text message. I've never received a really thoughtful email that said sent from my BlackBerry at the bottom. I think the issue is we're getting more volume. Right, and so you're now getting text messages all the time, and I'm getting instant messages, and I'm getting email, and I'm getting Skype calls and phone calls. I'm two cell phones and my office phone. I feel like I'm being constantly inundated with communication.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got social networking to get updates on people that you don't really know that well. I don't really care what people are doing every 6 minutes enough that I really want status updates. And so I'm really cautious and concerned that we're figuring out ways to communicate more and say less all at the same time.
That's my view as well. And when I launched Blog Talk Radio, I created this conversational platform. It didn't exist before, and we're the first ones to actually merge the phone network into this environment to facilitate conversation. It's Podcast 2.0. I'm using a phone in New Jersey, and Hillary's in L.A., and she's calling in, and you're calling in. I guess up in Rochester area. Yeah. I don't know where you live now. But we're having a conversation, and other people are listening to it and commenting in the chat room, and then it's archived as a podcast with an RSS feed. When I spoke to the intelligentsia in San Francisco, you know, they didn't want any part of this. I mean, they're big. The buzzword is called media snacking. Have you heard that term?
I have not.
Okay, so media snacking.
I'm admittedly horrified, but I'm curious what it is.
So media snacking is, you know, 140 bits. Like people are only interested in consuming, or they quote unquote their people, in information that is 140 characters, like a Twitter post. So, for example, when John McCain or Brad Pitt was on Blog Talk Radio, you know, please forgive me that we're going past the 140 character limit. But that's what you're talking about. You're talking about
a different level of engagement. I mean, I think that's maybe what David would like about Blog Talk Radio, is that it is a high level of engagement, and the people who are listening are really participating. It's not like with Twitter, like you're saying, David, you have to kind of scan a large amount of information and not really get too much or stay too long on any one thought. You know, it's a very quick, you know, breeze, and this is kind of the opposite of that, and that we go in depth and people are calling in. You know, we had David Mamet on yesterday, and people were asking him his favorite movies and his influences, and just like he was chatting with them, you know, really talking to someone in real life is just a totally different experience than texting and Twittering.
Yeah, and it's such an ironic thing that we, you know, we're prescribing Ritalin and other ADD medications in greater numbers than ever before, while we simultaneously create texting and SMS, you know, MMSing and Twittering, so we can keep forcing people to bifurcate their attention at an increasing percentage of time. And I just think it's scary. And I think I don't have kids, but I can imagine not wanting children to grow up only being able to send 80 or 100 characters at a time.
Well, you spend a lot of time with the enterprise, and where do you see them? And where do you see them wanting to create engagement? We have many conversations with Fortune 500 companies, Dow 30 companies, agencies. They're hope that a lot of these clients that we're finding want engagement on their site, but it's very challenging to do that. But what are the types of things that you're seeing work? Because we saw on one of your posts that you felt that social networks are useless for business. Can you explain?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, what I said earlier, where I don't want to get updates on 50 people I don't know or care about. And I can't tell you how many times I've walked into business meetings, especially lately, and later I get a Facebook invitation from a 50-year-old guy that I met for 30 minutes in a meeting. That's not a friend.
Right.
And so I bet you 70% of the LinkedIn requests, and I get tons of them, are from people whose names I couldn't pick out of a lineup. And so I think that, to me, the problem with social networks today, and the same problem with the business networks like LinkedIn, is that they're ignoring what it means to really have a relationship. And I'll give you the best example is, our chairman is one of the Forbes 400. He's one of the Forbes billionaires. He's a founder of a company called Paychex, which is a $2 billion company, owns
sure.
the Buffalo Sabres. Very prominent guy. And not like 3 weeks ago, I got a request on LinkedIn. And I mean, it made me laugh, because it was some woman named Jane who contacted a guy named Bob, who had gone through, Bob knew Billy or whoever the guy was, that had sent me some random LinkedIn invitation like a year ago, but I barely knew the guy. So this was three people removed asking for a personal recommendation and introduction into Tom Golisano. And I mean, it's absurd that
well,
people
think. Well, I
think
everyone has different expectations, and everyone's coming from a different place. So, being that everyone's using it, you know, the guy you met in the meeting really thinks that you can help connect him, and he wants to stay in touch with you. And so, receiving your status updates would be the best way to do that. But I see what you're saying about its limited usefulness for certain types of actual deep business interactions.
Well, I think that the fundamental underlying tenet that relationships have to be mutually beneficial to exist, right? So when I used to study sociology, they'll always tell you that for a relationship to exist over long periods of time, it has to be perceived to have benefit on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And what you find in LinkedIn is a lot of people that don't understand that facet of relationships. It's all about asking for stuff. And so I think that in order for LinkedIn and other sites to really become useful, I don't really care on status updates on 1,000 people. What I really want to know is the 20 people in my life and the 20 people in your life that you really care about, you know, that are really meaningful relationships, how do I engage with those people at a deeper level? And I don't think social networks have figured out how to do that yet.
You think they're all engaging everyone on the same level?
I think they engage. They're good for engaging mass amounts of people
mm-hmm.
for very brief periods of time and without very deep engagement. And to me, where I think social networks have to go is much deeper engagement with people that you really have relationships with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, some of that stuff is fleeting. Like I find myself, I use LinkedIn less than I did last year, even though I have more contacts. I use Facebook less than I did.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because I'd just rather pick up the phone and talk to a person. I'd rather have a conversation. I'd rather go take them to dinner.
That's what Blog Talk Radio is about. I mean, when I created the company, my background's in telecom. And when I got exposed to a blog the first time in March 2006 when my dad was ill with lymphoma, and I created a blog for him, and I wanted my family and friends to, you know, find out how we're doing. And we post every day. And I was blown away by this community of 60 million blogs. And everyone talking about conversation, but I said, I don't hear any. Where are
yep.
they? And that's how I came up with this idea. And, you know, we add a lot of value to the users because the people, the hosts on Blog Talk Radio, are building communities and building they're having conversations and building social communities around social media around real conversations, which is a higher level of conversation, which is ironic because it's the most simple technology, which is the phone,
yep.
which is somewhat bizarre.
Well,
there's different levels of engagement here, too. I mean, there's people chatting and commenting. There's people who are listening later on and not interacting. So it reaches people in different ways at the same time, you know?
Yep, and I think, you know, look, I certainly don't represent everybody. I think there are people that would dramatically prefer to have a lot of relationships. And I think there's especially in the consumer element, there's very much a status element to it, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, kids want a lot of friends. But I think, you know, if you look at demographics, I think as people get older, they tend to look for depth and not breadth.
Yeah.
I my son's in college, and he goes to Indiana, and he uses Facebook, of course, and it was tremendously helpful for him. I think his interest in it is waning a bit. It was good when he was in high school, and then when he was going, the first day of school, he already knew 20 kids, and he knew them on Facebook. For the adults and for us, and, you know, when he got these invitations, you know, someone's throwing a heart at you or whatever, all that stupid stuff, I just cannot believe the spam that's rolling through there. What was your sense of the Beacon fiasco that took place?
I thought it was dumb when I first saw it. I couldn't – what I think it does is I think it tries to force and commercialize something that shouldn't be commercialized. And so, you know, I wrote a blog post about it, and I called it the 1% solution. And what I meant by that was if you think about how many products you're really passionate about, enough that you want to recommend it to someone, it's a very, very small percentage of the products that I buy. I mean, I buy Charmin, but nobody ever asked what kind of toilet paper I buy. I don't think it's something I could see myself blogging about, you know. And so I think people always use the example of the iPod. But
yeah.
The iPod is the exception. It's not the rule. And the iPod is such a powerful device in terms of how people look at it and how much of a platform it dominates, that it's the one company that doesn't need Beacon. And so I think you've got an inherent problem, which is the products that people want to talk about is such a narrow swath that I think it wouldn't work for the majority of advertisers.
And I agree with that. But I was speaking to a major brand this morning. They have a consumer product that they sell, and it's a dairy product. Nationwide, huge success. They do a lot of TV, and they're on, you know, Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune and these TV shows. And they're thinking about online strategies. They're used to reaching huge numbers, right? So in theory, you think that Facebook, you're going to get huge numbers, but of course you're going into these ad networks and no one's clicking on this, on these banners. I mean, maybe it's good for branding. But what about the dynamic where we live in such a fragmented world that it's hard for these major brands to understand that they, you know, they could reach 10,000 important people versus a million that don't even care about it at all. I mean, do you see that as isn't that a challenge for this fragmented wet world we live in for advertisers?
Well, fragmentation is challenging in the sense that really big brand advertisers, companies like American Express, Coke, their ad spends are so large that fragmentation makes it extremely difficult for them to put their budgets to work. So it's really easy to spend, you know, $200 million in TV, especially when prime time is $1 million a minute. So, you know, I could burn through a $200 million TV ad campaign in, you know, probably 30 days without trying. But conversely, if you talk about, you know, if you were to take that same $200 million and apply it to social networking, you would literally be spending more money on Facebook than all of the advertisers today combined. So how do you take it a step further and assume that you can only reach a small percentage of them? I just think it's really hard to figure out how to efficiently spend money on the web today, especially as fragmentation continues. So I think it's going to be a problem that's increasingly challenging for brand advertisers.
Especially with metrics, because it's hard to kind of, like you said, we don't know the level of engagement, and you know, people aren't necessarily going to be able to measure the impact that a certain advertisement in a certain very specific social network has on the consumers easily. So that's been, you know, going to be a problem for traditional brands, I think.
Yep, absolutely.
Let's give the phone number. Again, excuse me for interrupting, but the phone number is 347-677-0649. And also, I'm informed that we have our little click-to-talk button up on the profile
or on the show page.
If someone would like to try it, please do. We're testing it out. David, we created an interface where you can click a button and reach the show using our VoIP interface. So you don't even have to dial a phone number. And your phone number will appear on our switchboard here. So if anyone would like to do it, and it would be better, it would be great as well. If you had a question for David, feel free to either call or click, which is cool that I can actually say that. So what you're saying, it's going to get much harder for companies, advertisers to, you know, and I think for the agencies as well, because they place that money and it's in TV. But here's another interesting dynamic. People say to us, well, how many can you tell how many listeners you're getting? And of course, yes, after every show, we'll tell you how many listeners you get. That's totally unlike what they're getting from radio. And they're spending $20 billion a year, or in TV in many ways, right? I mean, we're living in a world where we're giving such specific results where they never had this before, and they spent a huge amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. That's why, you know, it is extremely important that people figure out how to deal with fragmented audiences, because usually another way to say fragmented is they've self-selected themselves into something that they're much more passionate about. And so, you know, fragmented audiences are probably the best audiences you can get, because I'd rather have 1,000 people that really care about whatever we happen to be talking about than having, you know, a million who have, you know, 1,000 different interests. So fragmentation is a good thing. It's just a hard thing to deal with.
Yeah, highly specialized. But you know what? In some ways, it rewards the best brands and products, because bloggers are pretty honest, and when they get pitches to write about products that they don't use or like, they're just not going to do it. So it kind of challenges the company or the product to be better, to be good enough to be blogged about in some ways.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no question that if the web has done nothing else, it's dramatically raised the level of transparency. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true for products. I think it's also true for the quality of news. When a reporter says something stupid today, you know, online, 1,000 people are going to be there to make comments on it.
Yeah.
You know, before it happened in your living room, now you get to do it publicly. And so I think it's a very good thing to add transparency to the discourse.
Yeah, it's accountability. We have a caller. Should we take it?
Yeah,
please.
Let's take it. Okay.
Olivia.
Turn up your volume.
Can you hear me?
Your volume on your phone.
Can you hear me?
Can you turn down the volume on your computer?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
See, I don't have any way of knowing if you can hear me because I can't hear you.
Oh, you can't hear us?
I don't know how this is going to work because I have my sound turned off. I'm just talking through the mic that's built into my laptop, because this is not the computer that I do my show on, which has a headset on it.
So I just wanted to try this out.
And this is what I'm doing, so I hope you can hear me. I don't usually do my show on this one, so it's usually better quality. But the only question is, how is this going to work if you have to turn the sound off when you're talking?
Well, thanks for your call. If you had a microphone on your phone, you'd be able to talk to us and engage us. You need a headset with a microphone, and you'll be able to hear the conversation going on. So thank you, Olivia. So what other things are you doing, David, now that, what do you see real excitement in the space? I mean, we've posed a lot of challenges, it seems, and there certainly are a lot, and as so many companies are looking to monetize this, where do you see the biggest opportunities?
So you're about to see $60 billion in internet advertising get created over the next 5 years. So I think there are three real major opportunities I see. The first is around video, as we already talked about. I think the second and probably the biggest one is around application advertising. So 6 of the top 10 sites on the web now are social networks. And so I think being able to figure out what is the right model to be able to monetize all of these applications is the second big one. And then the third one is mobile. But mobile is a weird one because I'm actually about to write my next media post article on this. Every time I go to a seminar or a ad conference and someone talks about mobile advertising, they always use the same stupid example that makes my blood curdle, which is they always say, well, imagine you're walking by a Starbucks and your cell phone rings and it offers you a coupon for 50 cents off a coffee. But the problem is that presumes that now your phone has the ability to ring every time a store wants to message something to you. Imagine if you were walking down the street of Manhattan and every time you walk by a store, some horrible ad, you're going to get medical supply ads. You're going to get coupons on all sorts of things that you have no interest in having. So at least the last time I checked, if you're going to pay $5 for a caramel macchiato, I think you're beyond the point where you need the coupon to incentivize you to walk in. And so I think the reality is that if you're standing in front of Starbucks, you're probably aware of it. And if you're not, you're probably not going to buy it. So I think mobile advertising, to me, the example they always use is such a ridiculous example when you start to look at how it would actually work, that I think someone has to figure out how to meaningfully change what mobile advertising looks like to make it useful.
I mean, is that what they're planning? Is that the format that they're planning? Where it's not enough that I spend, $100 a month with Verizon and now I have to deal with these ads?
Yeah, honestly, the problem is the advertisers never come at it from the perspective of the consumers, it seems. And so they really think that you're going to deal with advertising on your mobile device. But if you think about it, the only ads you would accept are from vendors that you already like.
Yeah.
Right? So I might deal with Starbucks coupons, but why would Starbucks want to pay for my ad and pay for the coupon if I'm going to go there anyway? And so the problem with location-based services is they could end up pushing ads while I'm already inside the store. And so they'd start losing revenue by offering coupons when I was going to buy anyway.
I see.
So, I don't think people want ads on their telephone. I certainly think that's, hopefully one of the last bastions of places they stop sticking an ad. So I don't see that. I think the reality is, I think what's going to happen is mobile phones are getting bigger displays as evidenced by the iPhone. They're getting better user interfaces. And I think the reality is they're going to start feeling like little computers. And so I think, simple transactions are the type of stuff you'd like to do. Like, it would be great to say, not an ad, but instead, show me the 10 Italian restaurants closest to where I'm standing right now that have availability. Show me the availability and movie times for the 3 movie theaters closest to me. So I think, to me, the mobile devices are all about transactions. They're all about how do you get stuff done. And so I think there's a real ownership and opportunity to be able to offer up services that are part of that mobile experience. And I don't think it's banner ads and Starbucks coupons, my phone ringing when I walk by the store.
Yeah, you want to annoy people the least amount possible if you want them to buy something, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I take another call?
Let's take another call.
Let's try our we're trying our click to talk platform here.
Hello, Vortex, you're on the air.
There we go. Hello. Hi, Vortex of Freedom. You're on Blog Talk Radio.
Vortex we might have a mic issue here.
Ah, okay.
Hello?
Yeah, hello.
Hello.
Hi, do you have a question?
How's it going?
Very good. Very good, thanks. Do you have a question?
Yeah. Like the of things like Blog Talk Radio and like certain types of, you know, like networking where it would be like in you can listen, like
I
if I want to listen to a show, I have to be by a computer.
Right, Vortex, you're breaking up, so we'll put that question in the chat room.
Yeah,
you know, it's,
yeah.
It's
I
like,
think it has to do with portability of shows like Blog Talk Radio and other media, but yeah, Vortex, if you could type that in the chat room, we'll read it aloud.
Yeah, I feel like Mike and the Mad Dog when we start when you know the guys that are calling in from the New York Turnpike way up. It's you know their calls going in and out. Where do you spend most of your time on the East Coast? You spend a lot of time in San Francisco or the Valley with the you know the social media gurus and so on.
I actually split my time pretty evenly. So I spend about 25-30% of it in Rochester, New York. Which is great because anytime you start believing that everybody's twittering, you just come to Rochester and nobody knows what the term means. So I kind of like that balance of time because I spend enough time in Silicon Valley to keep up with the trends, but not enough time to drink the Kool-Aid. So I spend about 25% of my time in California because a lot of our customers are there, about 25% in New York City, 25-30 in Rochester, and then the rest on the road visiting customers.
And how big is this company? I mean, when was this company formed? It seems enormous.
We were formed in March 99. We're about 100 employees now. So we've got 3 data centers around the world, and we do about 6 billion email messages a month hit our servers.
6 billion email messages. And so you sell advertising in those email messages?
No, we don't. We don't today. So the only way we do advertising is this model we built called Featuretizements. Where we actually go out and integrate services into the application that enhance the user experience. So, for example, we did a deal with Orbitz for travel. So one of the huge pain in the asses of being a small business is dealing with travel booking and rescheduling and delays and all the pieces that come along with that. And I've spent enough Saturday nights in airports to start appreciating how much travel is a hassle. And so we built a service with Orbitz where you can actually go into your calendar and all you do is drag, and in natural language you say, show me flights from Rochester to Chicago. And the system is smart enough to understand your natural language, go out and scan 7 million flights, filter the results that match your schedule and criteria, and overlay them on top of your calendar so you can see what works with your schedule. And then you just click on the flight you want, click on the return flight, and you can now book travel without leaving your calendar in 30 seconds. And so in the next version, we're going a step further. We're actually going to scan your calendar actively. And so, you know, I've gotten stuck where I'm in the air, and I'm going to be 2 hours late, but I can't let the person know because I'm in the air. And so we're now actually going to allow you to actually, it'll automatically email the person and say, by the way, David is on his way, but he's stuck in the air above LaGuardia right now. He'll be there approximately 45 minutes late.
And your Blue Tie develops those technologies to do that?
Yep, we develop those technologies, and the way we generate revenue is we earn a share of the transaction. So every time you book a hotel or rent a car, we just did a deal with eFax, so you can now, instead of paying $6 a minute for the hotel fax machine, you can right-click on a document and just eFax it right through the web. So we really tried to focus on what are users trying to accomplish. And so going back to that argument about how do you make social networking, you know, a profitable venture, I think what it comes down to is, how do you integrate features into social networking that happen to generate revenue? And so, for example, how many dinner conversations get started in Facebook? You know, how many plans to go to movies or concerts or dinner? You know, and so if you could take those and you can enable the users to, you know, if I say to you, hey, do you want to see Iron Man? And all of a sudden it shows me showtimes at the theaters between you and I can click and buy it through Fandango and invite a bunch of friends, and they can buy tickets on the fly. I think there's a lot of ways you can add value to that user experience.
Yeah, by making
Very
it more
cool.
convenient. I mean, you're really focused on convenience, and so, I think that's success.
Well, let me ask you a question. We have we send out 5 million. Let's assume I send out 5 million emails a day to my community, and it's housewives. And do you help us, or do you bring, you know, how can we work with you? If we send out 5 million emails a day, you know, how could we work with you?
So we have a partnership that allows us to do what's called tagline advertising, where we can actually insert messages in the bottom. But primarily the solution that Feature Tizens is focused on is not on how do you monetize the sending of emails, it's how do you monetize the application people sit in. So, you know, for example, people sit in Facebook, they sit in Flickr, they sit in Picasa, they sit in, you know, BlueTie and other email-based and countering and other applications. And so what we're trying to do is figure out what value can we add by integrating functionality into those applications to make their lives easier. So whether it's, you know, faxing or booking travel, or whether it's, you know, services like we just added the ability to order flowers through FTD. So they'll say, hey, by the way, it's your spouse's birthday in 2 days. Click here to send flowers. Click here to send a gift through Amazon.com. So we're very much focused on application-centric advertising.
I see. So not email. Okay.
No.
I would be interested because we do have that particular circumstance. So maybe we'll talk at it another time, or we'll get in touch. Maybe you have some recommendations.
Yeah, definitely.
For companies that do that.
I think there's a lot of opportunity to monetize email. I think, to me, application advertising and content advertising are very different things. You know, the problem that we're trying to solve with our Feature Tizens technology is about how do you monetize an application. And we think ultimately that has to, you know, to that email, that article that I wrote on MediaPost, it's got to start with user experience. How do you make that user experience better for a user? Because I have never yet felt that a banner ad in the corner of the screen flashing with a monkey running around enhances the user experience.
Yeah.
That's true.
I'm glad our business is not built on monkeys and sitting on the side, you know, of pages. Well, anyway, we have a couple more moments, so I want to thank you.
The caller typed their question in the chat room. It was about making Blog Talk Radio portable because we were talking about portability. And so Rob, who's our guru of technology here, was answering it in the chat room about how we're working on that.
Well, yeah. I mean, so the thing about the video, I mean, there's everything's video. People come to me all the time, why aren't you in video? Why aren't you in video? And we happen to be the only, we do have web chat in these shows where the featured host can do web chat. But we are an audio platform, and where people are having conversations like this, which would translate very well to the, you know, billion phones out there that are supporting music or talk radio. Same being said for the cars, when WiMAX and ultimately when Google is going to be replace the dashboard in a car, content is going to be king. So Blog Talk Radio is just generating an enormous amount of content. In fact, we've produced 90,000 episodes since we launched, and in April, 75% of those were listened to at least one time. So this is really the long tail as defined. It's fascinating. Well,
I think over time, too, you're going to have mobile devices that are going to get faster, consistent internet connections. You've already got Bluetooth. So, you know, I can imagine it not being too long before all of a sudden my cell phone streams down Blog Talk Radio and pushes it through my car speaker, so on the way to work I can listen to it.
Right, exactly. I mean, in fact, we are speaking with a lot of the phone companies because they're clueless about social media, number one, and they're all seeking applications that do what? Use more phone consumption. So, you know, whether you're listening, creating, or listening live, or listening in an archive, or creating content, the phone is a good device for that. So anyway, look, David, it was great meeting with you today. I read your post, how to monetize web-based applications, which is on, I see it here on February 14th. Was that when it was posted the first time?
I think so.
Yeah. That was excellent, and you're very knowledgeable, and I want to thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me.
Okay, my pleasure. That's David Koritz, and David is the founder and president of BlueTie.com. Very bright guy, and Hillary, good interview, I think.
Yeah, thanks, David, for joining us. It was really enjoyable.
Yeah, my pleasure. I really appreciated you having me on.
Cool.
So, Hillary, we had a couple of great shows yesterday with David Mamet, and I'm not pronouncing it well.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, David Mamet. And what's coming up for next week? Any big stuff that you know
about?
Well,
today we have Margaret Cho, so I wanted to shout out to that. She's a hilarious comedian with a big following. She's going to be on tonight on Olivia's show, so that should be good. Next week, what do we have coming up next week? Your usual, you know, bevy of exciting actors and comedians and such. Nothing's standing out right now in terms of ultra mega stars, but
okay.
We have a lot of cool things happening next week.
Well, let us know. If anything good comes up, let us know at hostpr@blogtalkradio.com. Once again, thank you all for joining at the Alan Levy Show. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you soon. Thank you.
Thanks for joining Alan and Hillary on the Alan Levy Show. Make sure to join the conversation by calling 347-677-0649 and listen to the Alan Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio.